Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 18th of July, 2018. I'm your host, Surreal Gerald Quinn, as we get ready for the second half of the baseball season. All-Star Game was completed tonight. As usual, the American League handled his business 8-6 over the National League. American League has dominated this matchup over the last 10 years, basically 10 to 15 years. 10 to 15 years, and that was no different tonight in terms of what happened. But that was not the big news as far as baseball goes. Manny Machado is now a Los Angeles Dodger. So Manny Machado, the great Baltimore Oriole, who is one of, in my opinion, outside of Mike Trout, the best player in baseball. I think this guy is a superstar. This guy is somebody who is somebody that you can build your team around from in terms of the batting order. Tremendous fielder. We know what he can do at the plate. So the Dodgers, it makes perfect sense that the Dodgers pick him up for the stretch run. Right now, the Dodgers have a half-game lead in the National League West. That should be a great race going down the stretch when you're with basically everybody except San Diego in that particular race, with the Rockies, Diamondbacks, and the Giants, who also have a chance. Who we'll see what the Giants do with Madison Bumgarner. Haven't heard much talk about moving him. I told you weeks ago that if I were the Giants, I would try to make moves with Madison Bumgarner. And get a ton of prospects. But you know what? The Giants are only four games out. They might decide, you know, the hell with it. We're going to go for it, try to win it, try to win the division and see what happens in the playoffs. So you're going to get the second half of the baseball season coming up in a couple of days on Thursday. A lot of complaining in terms of regards to baseball in terms of the pace of play. And listen, baseball, to me, I've always looked at baseball like I look at certain drinks, whether it's, you know, scotch, whiskey, bourbon. Baseball is meant to be drunk slow. Baseball is not something you guzzle down like Gatorade, like, you know, like this alkaline water that I'm drinking right now. By the way, I highly recommend alkaline water, just for the record here. Best tasting water that I've ever had. But baseball, you don't guzzle down baseball. It's not basketball, it's not soccer, it's not tennis, it is not a fast paced sport. Baseball, so young people ages 30 and under, 35 and under, and basically I would even say 40 and under, are not going to watch baseball the way, you know, somebody 45 to 50, 60 years, 56 years, to 50 to 60 years old is going to watch it. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, I just keep hearing complaints about how slow the game is. And, you know, baseball has tried to make, you know, minor tweaks with the mound visits and things of that nature. Just accept the fact that baseball is a slow paced sport. It's just, that's not going to change. And it's meant to be played at a slow pace. Baseball is not a fast paced sport. So if you go to a baseball game or if you're watching a baseball game, you're going to invest, be prepared to invest anywhere from 3.5 to 4 hours of your time watching that baseball game, either being at the ballpark or watching the baseball game. Again, I don't know what the complaints is. People are talking about attendance being down. Listen, local television ratings are good. Revenue is not down by any stretch of imagination. These local markets are making a ton of money, television money, locally. And the bottom line is we live in a society where there are, you know, you have television programs who don't get the same ratings that they did in the 80s and 90s, 70s, 80s and 90s. That's just, there are just more things to do, more things to watch. Netflix's, Amazon's, apps. Yeah, I mean, technology, social media. So technology is all over the place in 2018. And we live in a society that is the quote unquote microwave society. We don't have any patience. We don't have the patience when it comes to news, hence Twitter. We don't have patience when it comes to food. We don't have patience when it comes to anything. So I don't think there's anything wrong with baseball. You want to complain about shifts, you want to complain about too many strikeouts. Again, I don't know what baseball can do about guys striking out. I honestly, I wish there were more contact hitters, guys that put the ball in play. That would be, you'd rather see less home runs, more baseballs, in play. More contact hitters than all of these strikeouts, but that's the game. Baseball has kind of gotten like the NBA in terms of the 3-point revolution with the NBA. Baseball now is home run or strikeout. It's home run or strikeout. Look at the numbers. But the idea of speeding up the game, good luck with that. I don't see how you're going to speed up the game. I just don't. And again, it's not meant to be sped up. We'll see what the Nationals do moving into the second half. The Nationals are in a, tricky spot. I've told you what I would have done. I would have went after Machado and traded Bryce Harper. That would be my opinion. That'd be if I'm running the team, my personal opinion. I knew that wasn't going to happen, so. It seems to me that the Nationals are going to ride with Bryce Harper and then try to sign him in the offseason. I'd be shocked. I mean shocked if Bryce Harper was signed, were re-signed, not re-signed, but if Bryce Harper were traded by the Nationals. I don't see that happening. I frankly don't see that happening. So there you go with the baseball, moving into the second half of the season. As far as the NBA, Kawhi Leonard, still San Antonio Spur as of right now, still San Antonio Spur. I know I've heard some talks about Toronto, which actually makes sense considering Toronto has some nice young pieces. They also have a couple of all-stars in DeRozan. And Lowry, DeRozan would probably be the one that, if you, in terms of age and ability, that you would want, in terms of the position that he plays, that you would want if you're San Antonio. DeRozan, a couple other players, some draft picks. But I think he's going to be moved. There's no question that he will be moved before the summer's over. More than likely, again, Portland's starting to come up. Portland's starting to come up again. Portland has either Lillard or McCollum that they can move for them. They also have some nice young pieces as well. The bottom line is, if you're Toronto, if you're Portland, do you really want to rent him for a year? Because he's not re-signing with either Portland or Toronto. See, the Sixers could risk moving Sarge, some draft picks and a couple of pieces, because you're not moving Ben Simmons or Embiid. And if you get there, if he goes to the Sixers, it's not out of the realms of possibility that Kawhi Leonard, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid could win an NBA championship next year. That's not out of the realms of possibility. They can get to the finals and possibly win a championship. I wouldn't be would anybody be shocked if shocked if that team won a championship or got to the finals. So Sixers be like, hey, you get the finals, possibly win a championship, increases the likelihood that he would resign there. I would doubt it still, but it would make more sense for the Sixers to go after him than it would, a Toronto or a Portland. Toronto, to me, and they had, consider they are a serious threat to get him. They might just be like, hey, hey, we're gonna just take a shot out, you know, try to get the East is, could be open next year. We're gonna take a shot. Would you know, why not if you're Toronto? What really do you have to lose if you're Toronto by trying to get Kawhi Leonard? You really have nothing to lose. Your team is stuck in, to me, they're stuck in NBA purgatory, and that is the middle. They are a middle team that has no chance of winning a championship. So you might as well just take a shot. Maybe, you know, maybe he comes in, you know, goes back to being Kawhi Leonard, a legit top three player in the league, and maybe you make a run at the NBA Finals. Portland, I wouldn't do it if I were Portland, but Portland at this point has nothing to lose. Again, they are absolutely stuck in the middle. You know, maybe if you move McCollum for him and a couple pieces, that gets you a couple extra wins. It doesn't get you any closer to Golden State. I don't think it gets you that much closer to a Golden State or even to a Houston for that matter. But I think more than likely you're probably going to see him either end up in Philly or Toronto. That would be my guess for the up and coming season before he comes to LA in the offseason. And I'm not talking about the Clippers. He'll be end up with Cleveland, with Portland, or not Portland, Toronto, or Philadelphia. As far as the other stories going on in the NBA, I addressed this a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to address it again. The Kobe fans responding to LeBron. And at this point, I think it's kind of gotten misconstrued, because initially you want to say LeBron, Kobe fans hate LeBron and they don't want LeBron to be a Laker. It's a little bit deeper than that. Okay, these are Kobe fans who feel like Kobe has been overlooked in terms of being viewed as one of the greatest players of all time, one of the top five, top 10 players of all time. And what has happened is, you know, when you hear things like, when Kobe fans hear things like LeBron's been the best player for a decade, look at the Kobe fans gonna look at it as an insult. Like, really, in 2007, 2008, he was the best player when he had no rings, and when Kobe was at the top of his game. And people who don't like Kobe have used LeBron to bash Kobe Bryant. So they'll attack Kobe Bryant's shooting percentage. Well, look how efficient LeBron is. Or they'll attack Kobe Bryant's shot selection. Well, LeBron doesn't take those shots. Or they'll attack Kobe Bryant as a scorer. Well, LeBron gets everybody involved. He makes everybody better. And just totally dismiss the fact that Lamar Odom, Paul Gasol, Trevor Ariza, Andrew Bynum all had their best years playing with Kobe Bryant. So that is what annoys the Kobe fan to no end. Trust me. It's not about LeBron. It's not about hating LeBron as much as it's about loving Kobe Bryant. Or this is the one. We've never seen a player play this at this level in year 15. Dude, Kobe was all NBA first team in year 15. Kobe was first team all NBA in year 17. Now, Kobe was not the best player in the league in year 17. In year 15. I will say that. LeBron, we've never seen a player this late in his career be the best player in the league. And that's something, and gives all the credit in the world to LeBron James, conditioning and just maintaining a level of play at year 15 that we haven't seen in terms of being the best player in the world. But we've have seen another guy be at a top player in their 15th year. Kobe Bryant was a top three player. Only guys like year 15, Kobe Bryant. Only two players that were better than Kobe Bryant in year 15 were LeBron James and Kevin Durant. Kobe Bryant's the third best player in his 15th year, and was a legit top five player in year 17. And listen, Laker fans are going to hold LeBron accountable. Like, you're not bigger than the Lakers. You may have been bigger than Cleveland. Okay. You may have, to a lesser extent, been bigger than Miami, even with Dwayne Wade and Pat Riley. We are the Lakers. We have 16 banners. We have Jack Nicholson, Jerry Buss, the late Jerry Buss, Magic Johnson. This is Jerry West, Kobe Bryant. This is the Lakers. You are just a part of the history. You're just another chapter. You're not the entire. You're not the entire book, like you were in Cleveland. Cleveland, he was the book. He was two books in Cleveland. His first stint and second stint, not two chapters, two books. He's a Cleveland Cavalier. It's not the case as a Los Angeles. Again, I love the Laker fans who are going to hold LeBron James accountable. It's cool. You came here. You're gonna do your Hollywood thing. You're gonna learn the magic, how to be the second billionaire basketball player along with Michael Jordan. But you're still expected to win a championship. No, it doesn't have to be multiple championships. We understand you're in year 16 now. And you're closer to the end than you were at the beginning. But it's about winning a championship. Make no mistake about that. And the Laker fans will hold LeBron James accountable. Just like they held Kobe accountable. I mean, when Kobe and Shaq didn't win anything, remember, it took Kobe and Shaq 4 years. They got together. Kobe was drafted in 96. They didn't win their first championship together until 2000, until the 99-2000 season. So it took them 3 years to win a championship. And they were getting destroyed by Laker fans, by people around the NBA before they won that championship. So this is, everybody has to go through this if you're a Los Angeles Laker. This is a part of being a Laker. But this is not about hating LeBron James. No Laker fan hates LeBron James if they love basketball and they know anything about basketball. But they love Kobe. Don't forget about that. Got a chance to see the Robin Williams special on HBO on Monday night. Again, there's nobody on television that does better documentaries, biopics than HBO. HBO just destroys it. Again, I know, for the first time in 17 years that Netflix beat them out. As far as most Emmy nominations, I get that. And eventually it was going to happen. I mean, no streak lasts forever. But it was something that, first of all, I forgot that Robin Williams, it had been 4 years since Robin Williams passed away. Didn't realize it had been that long. Coming up on the anniversary, man, August of 2014, that he passed away. And, you get an understanding of, or you got a better get a better understanding of the amount of pressure and the amount of time and energy that goes into being great at something. Like Robin Williams was obsessed with being funny. and obsessed to a point to where it became a drug even before he was started using drugs. I thought the best line in that special was Billy Crystal saying, "The laugh becomes a drug." Like you're just trying to, you are trying so hard to generate, to make people laugh that, you know, it has, it's something that you just become addicted to, just people, to wanting to please people and to want, you know, it kind of, you kind of lose your identity. And I just thought that, you know, that Robin Williams just never got a sense of who he was and just was this obsessed with obsessed with making people laugh and was paranoid about it, and it literally drove him to, basically drove him to committing suicide. On top of, you know, on top of just the daily stuff that we all go through in our lives, the daily pressures, the daily issues. But again, HBO, you know, if you haven't seen it, I would encourage watching it. Just gives you a more a sense of mental illness, a better grasp of mental illness, what it can look like. And it goes, again, it goes beyond celebrity, like, you know, partying, drugs, things of that nature. It dealt with some of those things, but it goes beyond that. And again, this guy, you know, Robin Williams was just one of the most talented comedians that ever walked the face of the earth. I mean, he was, this guy was, as far as comedic actors, like I would, when you rank him, I'm trying to think. He's a better actor. Now, Eddie Murphy's funnier, but I don't think Eddie Murphy is a better pure actor than Robin. Eddie Murphy, I think Eddie Murphy's an underrated actor. I think Eddie Murphy, when he wants to be, can be good. But Robin Williams, you know, won an Oscar. When he started playing these dramatic roles, Good Will Hunting, the, you know, Good Will Hunting and 1 Hour Photo, Awakenings, things of that nature. I mean, Robin Williams was a tremendous actor, separate from being a great actor, not a good actor. He was a great actor, and again, a guy who just was as talented of a comedian as you that has ever lived. I mean, right, like nonstop. But you know, you just wonder, you know, he's just constantly, nonstop trying to make everybody around him laugh, trying to make everybody around him feel good about being about themselves, and didn't really take the time to you know, take care of himself. Now he almost got the sense that he was too he was too unselfish in a sense. He was more concerned about what others thought and how others felt than he was about dealing with himself and his feelings and his thoughts. So that is, you know, again, mental illness is real. Therapy, that's real. It is something that, you know, I'm glad is being exposed. I shouldn't say exposed, but you know, being, you know, you saw a couple of, you know, you saw DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Love come out and talk about it. It's something that should be talked about. You can't talk about it enough because it is legitimate. You saw what happened with Anthony Bourdain. We've seen us, you know, suicides go up, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of in recent years. I'm talking about suicides amongst celebrities, and we already know what's happening with the NFL and how much the CTE contributes to that. But I definitely would encourage watching that special. HBO Come Inside, I think it's called Come Inside My Mind. And again, HBO does a phenomenal job with that particular special. They did just did some great work with that. I want to get on the Drake album. Want to talk about that, touch on that as well. So the Drake album right now, again, as you know, is already going platinum. It's about to go, it will probably before the end of the month be double platinum. He has not only seven of the top 10 hits in terms of the Hot 100 charts, he has all 25 of his songs on the Hot 100, which is something that I've never seen an artist have every single one of their songs simultaneously be listed in that top 100. And it got to a point to where when I was doing the research, looking at crunching all these numbers, well, I had to go and listen to the album again because I, you know, it got to a point that I was like, what did I miss the first 2 to 3 listens, the first 2 listens? I only listened to it when it came out. I only listened to it twice because it was just too many. It is too many tracks. You're talking 25 tracks, and I really only messed with, I would say, 6 or 7 of the tracks. I would say about 7, which is not a lot when it's 25 tracks. On an album, so I thought that was one of my critiques. I thought it was too long, and it was too many tracks that I just didn't particularly care for. But he, you know, whatever. Again, the Drake phenomenon is at an all-time high, and really, you know, 10 to 15 years ago now, 10 to 15 years from now, 10 years from now, the argument for greatest rapper. The argument for greatest rapper. There are going to be three names in the argument for greatest rapper. Jay-Z, Kendrick Lamar, and Drake. Those are going to be the three names. Sorry, Nas fans. Sorry, Tupac. Sorry, Biggie. You know, sorry, Rakim fans. But those are going to be the three names. Jay-Z, Kendrick, Drake. And again, a billion streams. This album is going to, you know, sell who knows how many copies this album sells. Again, I've never seen anything like it. That a guy who I again and Drake, listen, I wouldn't compare Drake to, you know, like a Nelly or even like an Eminem, two rappers that I really don't particularly care for, who sold a ton of albums, got popular, especially Eminem. Eminem's held, of course, high, much higher regard than Nelly, but we remember, you know, Nelly had that, you know, had that 2 to 3 year run where he was one of the top hot, you know, one of the most popular rappers in the game. Eminem had his run, and people still regard Eminem, you know, as a top 10, top 5. There are people that think Eminem, that will argue for Eminem being the greatest rapper of all time, or top 3, top 5, minimum top 5. He's not, he wouldn't crack my top 10 personally. But, I think Drake is there is above average rapper. I like Drake. I've never been in love with Drake albums. I don't think Drake has made, and even I don't think this is a great album. I don't think this is a great album. But the amount of popularity, the numbers that it's putting up cannot be denied. I mean, it gets to a point to where you just can't ignore these types of numbers. Like, you know, Russell Westbrook threw up a triple double, and I'm not a guy who cares about triple doubles, but you know, still 30, 10, 30, 11, and 10. I mean, there's still great numbers, and you still have to take notice of it. And that's where Drake is at right now. You still have to take notice of what he's doing. Like, you can't deny it, whether you're a Drake fan or not. Again, to a point, got to the point to where I had to listen to the album again. I had to listen to the album again because, like, what did I miss the first time from this album? What did I miss? So it's going to set all kinds of records. is going to, you know, he's going to win every type of award known to man, Grammys, American Music Awards. This is going to be a historic album for the culture, hip hop culture. It's all there is to it. And it's going to go down as one of the great rap albums, rap albums of all time. It's going to, whether you like it or not, strictly by the numbers, it will go down as one of the best rap albums of all time. Just on numbers. Fair or unfair. So, those, again, I've never seen artists have every track from their album in the top 100. Every track. So think about that. That's you have 100 songs. He has a quarter of the top 100, a quarter of the top 100, one artist. It's unheard of. Unheard of in the history of music is unheard of. Michael Jackson, Bruce Springsteen, U2, no art, the Beatles, none of these artists, Bob Dylan, whoever you wanted to, like Whitney Houston, no artist has ever done this, ever. Beyonce, Jay-Z. So right now, there's no artist in the game that is able to generate more hits, individual hits, than Drake right now. Man, you know what? There's something to be said about that. There's something to be said where you want to talk about his marketing, you want to talk about production, you want to talk about, you know, coming along at the right time of technology. You know, he's with Apple. He's about to sign a deal with a company that's going to make him the highest paid, you know, rapper of all time. He's about to make $20 million in an album, which is unheard of. But right now, you are witnessing hip hop history in terms of what's going on with Drake. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I will see you next time. I'm out.